It's the Kenai Conversation. Good morning. You are listening to listener-supported public radio for the Central Kenai Peninsula, KDLL 91.9 FM, KenaiSalt.net. I'm Jay Barrett, and it is time, once again, as we do semi-irregularly, we bring in the men in fleece from the Peninsula Clarion to talk about sports. Actually, fleece and down today, I suppose. Joey Klecka, Jeff Helminiak, how are you guys doing?
Doing well.
Yeah?
Doing well. How about yourself, Jay?
You can't imagine how good I'm doing. The Seattle Mariners are two games ahead of the World Series champion Houston Astros in the American League West.
And they made them look silly last night.
They beat former Cy Young Award winner Dallas Keuchel.
Yep.
Beat them good, 7-1.
They did. That pitching staff has been incredible with Keuchel, Verlander, and I'm trying to remember some of the other names on there. Charlie Morton, I think.
Yeah. Yeah, and we beat Keuchel before this year, and then we lost the next three games in the series.
Oh.
So I'm not super optimistic for tonight and tomorrow and the next day, but we're two games ahead. So got a little breathing room, but, you know, our offense is it's just doing incredible, I like to say. And it's not, you know, it's not like they're hammering runs, running up the score real high. Winning a lot of close games. They have the best, one of the best records in one-run games in the league. Uh-huh. And they are the only team that's undefeated in extra innings this year.
Wow, great stats to know there.
Yeah, I mean, that one right there. I mean, before, you go into extra innings and the Mariners would just fall apart, you know, almost always. Their bullpen hasn't been screwing things up too much. Though they did leave Felix in for eight innings the other night, I think just because, you know, they screwed up his last start before that. So that's the long answer to your short question.
That's why we're the men in fleece and you're the man in the Ichiro jersey today.
That's right, man. You know, what's his name? Shailen Cochran was my close personal colleague, Shailen Cochran. couldn't be here. The assembly went late last night, and he was working. But it could have been three Cubs fans and you here, but our insurance wouldn't cover it.
Could have.
Man.
I mean, I've been to Miller Park for many a Cubs game where I'm outnumbered. I could have handled it.
That's funny, isn't it? I mean, I think we've talked about this before.
It's Wrigley North.
Yeah.
Yeah, I admit it. There's no denying it.
Though I watch a lot of baseball on TV, and Cubs fans are everywhere.
All of a sudden, yeah, it's amazing how that happens.
Yeah. It's, you know, if you don't have bandwagons, your fans will die off. So.
Yeah, I actually read an article in the Atlantic magazine that bandwagon fans are good to embrace being a bandwagon fan. Because who wants to wait like 106 years or whatever to win a World Series?
Yeah, yeah, no, exactly. I jumped on the bandwagon 40 years ago. though they were, 60 years into their drought at that point?
Yeah, at least. Yeah.
Yeah.
The Cubs are like, you mentioned the Mariners winning close games. The Cubs are kind of the opposite of that style this year. They're winning a lot of games in blowout fashion, but not winning the close ones. It's been, on that flip of the coin, that's been a little frustrating for me.
Yeah, they're trailing Milwaukee right now, but you know, they were further behind at this time last year.
They were. They at this time last year, they were struggling to be a 500 team. So they've had a nice road trip recently, and I think they've righted the ship. I don't know. I mean, if there was a ship to right, I guess they've righted it.
Yeah. No, I think they're doing well. You know, the pitchers they picked up, Darvish. You know, he's
He has not made friends in Chicago.
Yeah.
Yesterday they started a series with the Phillies, and they Jake Arrieta made his triumphant return to Wrigley Field because he plays for the Phillies this year, and fans embraced him. And I saw a quote. He told the reporters, "Hey, Chicago fans need, you know, will love you, Darvish, as soon as he starts playing well again." I'm like, "Well, yeah, of course."
Man, have you guys heard of any this thing? I spent a lot of time also on baseballreference.com.
Yeah, me too. Oh yeah, great site.
Well, maybe you can explain this to me, or maybe you know about it. Pythagorean luck?
I don't delve that deep in the stats. I'm not into analytics as much as that deep into it.
Yeah. Have you heard about this,
Jeff? I've only heard of the Pythagorean theorem, not Pythagorean luck.
Yeah. It's I'm gonna read it to you here. It's one of the new things that they're doing to measure, you know, performance of teams and players out there. But Pythagorean luck, the difference between the actual one-loss record and the Pythagorean one-loss record. So it's they're basically, I don't know where Pythagorean comes from in this phrase, but they're basically measuring how many times the team lucks into a win, right? And it's a plus or minus, and if you're zero, you're league average. Houston, let's see here. I'm on the website right now. Houston is minus -7.
So they're losing games they should win.
No.
It's the opposite. Okay.
Yeah, they are way, way ahead.
So you want to be minus.
Yeah, you want to have a minus score.
Okay.
Because you're not lucking into wins. You're winning going away.
Okay.
You know, like you're winning games you're supposed to win. And
is that leading the league?
Yeah.
Yeah.
By far.
Seems like it.
Dodgers minus -4, Cubs minus -4. On the other end of the spectrum.
I would have imagined minus -4 for the Cubs. It hasn't seemed that way.
Yeah. Yeah. I,
except for that Atlanta game back in April when they came back from an 8-run deficit.
Yeah. I'm not entirely sure how they calculated. You know, they have literally, it's probably like Pythagorean algebra or something to figure it out.
Gotta be the same.
Guys are smart. Yeah. Figure that out.
The other end of the spectrum, though, is the team that's plus +5. So they've lucked into 5 wins are the Mariners. So that's like not as good.
Yeah.
So they're basically what they're saying is at 38 and 22, the Mariners should be 33 and 27.
Yeah, they're better. They're not as good as a record indicates.
Right.
But they lead the division. Who cares?
Yeah, I know, by 2 games over Houston, who is on the other end of the luck spectrum. So, you know, when the Mariners fade and Houston...
So it should be 3 games behind is what you're saying.
Yeah. Oh, right. Yeah, exactly.
I think that if that makes sense.
It does make sense. Yeah.
Something like that.
Yeah.
Should the Cubs be leading the division?
I don't know. Do you keep track of Pythagorean luck for, say, how many times you get a free meal or a free drink at the bar or anything like that?
I bet you could calculate it.
Yeah, that'd be interesting to know.
Man. You want to put in some good words about your Brewers? They are leading their division.
My dad always said the Brewers' job is to keep the great fans of Wisconsin interested until the Packers start training camp. And they're doing the job this year. I mean, that's what none of the Cubs fans realize. They think it's all about the World Series or whatever. We're just looking to get to training camp.
That kind of makes sense, really.
Yeah. Man. I mean, like, it's, you know, you guys got to look forward to is the Bears in training camp.
Yeah. I think we have a phone call.
You sound so surprised.
How often does that happen? Hello, you're on the air.
Oh, good morning, Jay Barrett. This is your coworker whose name you forgot.
Momentarily, Shaylen Cochran. How are you?
No, I'm well. I didn't want Mr. Helminiak to get out of there without getting a little jazzing from the Cubs fan who slept in this morning.
Ah, please.
No, I guess really I had a question for him because the Brewers are harder and harder to fend off these last couple of years, and where are they in that rebuilding process? Is that working out to be a good model for them?
I mean, obviously it is. The David Stearns, Craig Council brain trust is doing really well. I'm surprised. That's why I say I'm happy to get to June, but, I mean, you never know. It could keep going on and on where... I don't know, they make the playoffs, but I'm not getting my hopes up. I mean, the Cubs have a lot more money, they have a lot more talent, so we'll just have to wait and see what happens.
Yeah, and I'll listen to you guys react about this off the air, but I just kind of want to see it up. What do you think about this emerging trend over the last, you know, 5-6 years of breaking a team totally down, stocking yourself with draft picks, and then going through this rebuild process. It seems to be like this new formula, and it kind of works. It really does seem to work. The Royals won, the Cubs won. These are teams that are not known for winning, but they both won in recent years and follow this template. And yeah, that, I don't know. I'd love to hear you guys talk about that for a minute.
All right. Thanks for calling.
Thank you.
Shaylin in Sport Lake. Thanks for calling.
Sport Lake.
I think he lives out that way. Sorry. You know what? Yeah, Sports Illustrated in 2014 had the Houston Astros. These are your 2017 world champion winners because of just that. You know, breaking down the team, getting draft picks, and
I don't know why that wasn't like a thing before. Why wouldn't you think that would work? I mean, you gotta endure a few bad years. The Miami Marlins this year, I mean, they completely, you know, Derek Jeter took over and completely demolished the team.
Yeah. Well, I remember when...
we'll see if they win, I guess.
Yeah, was it them or the Rays who won in 97? You know, they had a fire sale the next year. They got rid of everybody, literally everybody, and it was a young team, you know? I don't know. I think Billy Ball has something to do with it, you know? Sabermetrics, they're just looking at the numbers, and they figure, well, if we do this, we do that, you know, we can go up here. You know, which brings me to, are you following the MLB draft at all?
Not really.
Me neither.
I just saw who the Cubs picked, and that's it.
Oh. They're really trying to hype it, you know, like the NFL draft. Nobody cares.
It's the middle of the regular season right now.
Yeah, right?
In the middle of the College World Series, or, you know, their playoffs.
Right. Yeah. Where are these people going to go?
I'll throw out a theory about why it's working so well to stock with young players and achieve success. Back in the day when there was a lot of steroids in the league, that's when you'd have guys, you got them when they were 28, 32 years old, and they would still excel. Because baseball is, you know, it's a hard sport on your body. Batting every day, that heavy wood bat, or pitching, obviously, you're stretching your body to the limit. So these days, you know, it helps to have young guys, because if you have a guy in his 30s, you know, he's going to be breaking down. It's a risk, like Yu Darvish, as you Cubs fans know all too well. But, you know, back in the day, like, these guys who are 32 could still succeed because they were using performance-enhancing drugs, where now the rules are more stringent, the testing is more stringent. So I think it's harder to just stock up on, like, expensive free agents in their 30s and win a World Series, because a lot of those guys will end up breaking down.
Right, it's a great theory.
Yeah, it's almost like a Pythagorean theory.
Yeah, you know, that's all Greek to me. We may be the only three who got that.
I mean, I doubt that.
Yeah. It is public radio, I guess.
I like that theory, but yeah, that makes total sense. You get Well,
think about it. Like, why didn't they want to sign Arrieta? Because he was getting old, and they figured he was going to break down. You know, they didn't want to give him a lot of money over a lot of years. Back in the day, if you know, a guy was strong from taking performance-enhancing drugs, you'd maybe be more willing to give him that contract.
You know, that's an interesting, it brings up an interesting thought. You know, are we going to have pretty soon a surplus of free agents who are older and high salary, who are looking for longer contracts that teams are no longer willing to give them? You know, like, are we going to have a surplus of those?
A surplus of players who won't be able to get long-term deals at a later age?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that'll happen for sure, if it's not happening already.
Yeah, well, what's that gonna mean?
What's that going to mean to those players? They'll make less money, so they'll, like, you know, only make $60 million in their career versus $100 million. I mean, I think we're going to have to take up a collection.
Well, I was thinking for teams. I mean, are they going to stick with the team, or are they going to go out, test free agency, fail, and go back to the team? You know, because they make qualifying offers, and if they're rejected, I mean, what are the rules about going back to the team that whose offer you rejected? Do you have to take that offer, or is it negotiations open again? Or
I don't know the rules on that, but
yeah, no.
Yeah, I'm not a sports agent. I couldn't tell you.
Yeah.
Maybe, I mean, yeah, I don't know.
It could open up extra money for other players, younger, you know, younger players.
Definitely. I think that's the whole shift to being young, you know. I mean, I remember everyone was saying the Cubs were so young, then boom, they win the World Series. You can win a World Series with a young team these days.
Yeah, Houston.
Yeah.
Though I still think there's a shortage of quality pitchers in the majors.
I mean, it's like we talked about last time. It's going all to strikeouts and home runs. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
I mean, what is it, like a third of the batters are striking out or something like that? It's crazy.
Who's that Yankee slugger?
Aaron Judge?
Aaron Judge had played a doubleheader the other day.
Yeah.
His team played a doubleheader, and in one day he had 8 strikeouts. Yeah. In one day, in 9 at-bats.
Is that a record?
I think that tied a record or something. I can't remember what the stat was, but it was something like that.
Man.
You look at like someone like, you know, Joe DiMaggio had like 13 strikeouts in one season back in the day, you know. That's what we're talking about nowadays.
Right. Yeah. Man.
But I think it's top heavy. The pitching talent in the league seems like, you know, you got a couple guys just out on an island that are just pitching incredible, like Houston's pitching staff, Verlander and Keuchel. But there seems to be a bit more of a drop off after that. I don't know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But yeah, so Oilers start up tomorrow night.
I was just going to bring that up this very second. I say, speaking of baseball, I understand the Oilers are starting. The
boys of summer coming out tomorrow.
Man, who are we playing?
The Anchorage Bucks.
Okay.
And they're starting the season on a 6-game series.
Wow, so, really?
Yeah, at home here.
All right. Someone told me last night that a year or two ago or a few years ago, the roof blew off the grandstands.
Yeah.
And they haven't rebuilt it?
I walk by that place just about every day, and it's still from last I saw, it was still missing a roof. The grandstand area was still missing a roof. It blew off a couple of years ago in a freak windstorm or something. Uh-huh. I'd heard last year that they were trying to bring in funds to rebuild it, you know, put a roof back on. but right now, I think there's always bigger priorities, maybe.
Right.
So.
Yeah.
Hopefully they get a roof back.
Which one of you covers the Oilers?
I mean, I think I cover more games, of course.
Yeah, I think so.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so.
Yeah, the unfortunate thing about the roof is they could put space heaters up there, and it'll make it more comfortable for the fans on kind of the nasty nights but you know how it can be at that park.
Yeah,
you get that wind
cold
off the inlet.
Yeah.
Yeah, so, you know, I've heard some fans just aren't comfortable going on those type of nights anymore because they're not warm, which is unfortunate. But, the team just doesn't have the funds to replace that. They would like to, but they don't have it. They were able to put a new scoreboard in last year, which is pretty cool. It's got, like, the number of runs you scored in all 9 innings and stuff like that.
Oh.
So they have been able to make some improvements, but they haven't been able to make that one, unfortunately.
Hmm. Cool. Are the games broadcast locally?
Definitely. Yeah.
Who?
Dan Gensel and Bob Bird do an excellent job. They've been doing it. I think this will maybe be their 12th year together. They'll tell you tonight how many years they have together. But no, they do a great job. And
tomorrow night.
Yeah, it's definitely worth a listen.
Are they on KSLD, the ESPN station?
Yeah,
1140.
1140?
Okay. Yeah. Cool. Yeah, folks, tune in. You'll hear me cheering from the cheap seats.
Are you going to be a regular out there?
I'm going to try. I love baseball, as you can tell.
Yeah.
I have to bundle up. I hate sitting out there when it's cold, man. That's what ticked me off when I heard the roof was gone. It's like, oh, man, the heaters. That's my whole thing, was sitting under the heaters in June, you know?
That's why I have the press box.
Yeah. Oh, man.
But it also messes with the press box because that roof used to take the sun out of the equation.
Oh, yeah.
And now you just got this sun that just glares into the press box. So as good as Dan and Bob are, sometimes you'll kind of hear them lose the ball, and it's just because the sun can just provide a nasty glare in there. You have no idea what's going on.
Hmm.
Yeah. I mean, that's just an admission by the media. We have no idea what's going on. A lot of people will say, tell me something I don't know.
Yeah. Man. Are they still using wood bats?
Yeah.
Yeah? Cool.
Yeah, definitely.
Oh, excellent. I remember when they changed. I remember the year they changed.
Yeah.
It was 98 or 99 or 2000, something like that.
Yeah, that you hear the legendary stories of like a Bobby Thigpen hitting like a massive home run with an aluminum bat. So, yeah, they've changed to wood.
My one of my favorite Doonesbury cartoons is it's either Doonesbury or Zonker or somebody's sitting listening to the radio, you know, and it's the College World Series on the radio, and here's the pitch, and there's the swing. That's a long fly. And, you know, then the sound effect over the radio was dink instead of crack. And yeah. Zonker is like, dink. He says, aluminum bats, shaking his head. Did you see that story the other day about Little League bats?
I was just going to mention that in the New York Times.
Yeah.
You're a cultured reader, Jay Barrett. Yeah, I don't know if that's the case around here, but it's unfortunate because you don't like kids having to, you know, pay a lot to play. And basically the story we're talking about is, I think it's USA Baseball has put kind of stricter rules in place as far as what type of aluminum bats you can have. They've done a lot of study on the trampoline effect as far as the ball launching off the bat. And they've like said you can't use a bunch of bats. So now all these Little League programs that don't have a lot of money are all of a sudden having to buy these bats that can range from $65, I think, to $350.
Right.
And a lot of parents are having a big problem with that and, you know, not happy with USA Baseball. So while it's kind of safer for the kids and it's kind of putting some integrity back into the offensive aspect of the game, it's also causing some heartache among parents who want their kids to play baseball, but they don't have the money.
Right, yeah, and all those leagues, they're required to use those or they're not sanctioned.
Exactly. And they say it's not a hard thing for like a high school or a college team because they have so much money to play with. But if you're a little league team, then it's obviously harder to come up with the money.
Yeah. And of course, one of the problems is bats for little kids from T-ball through little league come in so many different sizes. You know, it's different than college or the pros, you know, that they have to make them in so many different sizes. And one of the things that increases the cost.
Exactly. Like in that article, they talked to a kid who I think he was called country already and he was still in Little League, which will probably say something about his growth rate. But his mom is like, every year I got to get like all new stuff, like all new spikes, all new bats. It's like costing me like, I don't know, $500-$600 a year. I can't afford it anymore.
Yeah.
And you don't like to hear that. You like to hear kids being able just to go out and play baseball, you know, just like in the sandlot, like they used to be able to do in the day.
Yeah.
Before the days of Pythagorean luck.
It'll be the downfall of baseball.
Hashtag analytics.
Did you ever watch Star Trek Deep Space Nine?
No, I did not. I think we have some coworkers who would be able to slide into this chair and discuss Star Wars a lot better than me.
It's Star Trek.
Whatever.
Excuse me, sir. We're talking about Star Trek.
Star what?
How about you? You ever see Deep Space Nine?
No. Oh, sorry.
Captain Sisko, the commander of the station, is a huge baseball fan. And this is set in the 23rd century, right? Baseball is extinct.
Ouch.
Has gone extinct in the 23rd century.
No good.
Yeah.
Why? What was the reason for the demise?
People got bored with it.
They don't play baseball in space.
No. Back at Earth, it faded away. Brought back by some Vulcans near the end of the series, though.
I'm pretty happy to hear the Earth is still alive in the 23rd century. I mean, it's hard to lose baseball, but I'll take the Earth any day.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. I liked your article about Twin City Raceways.
Oh yeah,
man, you're that was a lot of words.
A lot of words. Yeah. I mean, there's a lot going on.
Yeah, no, it's a compliment insofar as man, that was a you're really into it.
I can write well about racing because it's something I know a lot about.
That's true.
And so I don't get out there every weekend or every time they race out there. But when I do, I mean, I like to think I know what I'm talking about.
It shows. No, it was great. And all the interviews you threw in there and talking to people about their racing. The one guy who said he wasn't sure he was going to race this year. And everybody said, yeah, you're racing this year.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, the Legends driver. That kid... Brian Barber is the guy out there. He's this young man out there in the 88 Legends car. And he just, he's always fast. Anytime he's out there, he's the guy to beat. And he said he's just, and he went down. I didn't have had to get going, but I mean, I wish I had more time to ask him about it. But he said he was down in Las Vegas this winter driving in, some national, you know, championship, a meet or, you know, a series of races where, you know, the best Legends car drivers in the nation, I guess, or around there, at least in the region, maybe, they meet up. So, it'll be, there's a lot of stories. I feel like, you know, I could always, you know, go into greater detail with, but that was just a story about this past week. And that was just, you know, just the weekend's races. It was the season opening weekend for Twin City Raceway. And, you know, for example, there was, you know, another story I could have gone maybe and had its own story about, which was, I was talking to Sean Ensley, who's driver of a stock car out there, and, his family, they have a number of cars that they drive and they race, they call themselves Fraction Racing because the car numbers are fractions. It's not like you don't have the 5 car or the 10 car. You have a car with a 1/2 painted on the side. You have the 1/4 car, the 1/5 car. And he started telling me about his great grandfather in the 50s driving down in Texarkana. He started racing with fractions on the side of his car. But the racetracks didn't want fractions; they wanted whole numbers, and so eventually he ultimately landed him up here in Alaska. In the 1970s, when I believe Twin City Raceway was brand new, and they let him race, you know, with fraction numbered cars. So it's an interesting story, you know, hearing just that history going back that far for his family, and now he's driving. He's just recently, a couple of years ago, got in a race in Twin City. So it's an interesting story.
Man, that is. Yeah. So he was allowed to race with fractions here, so he settled down?
I guess so, yeah. Like I said, I could go deeper into it if I had the time. I'd like to, if I had the time with him. Like I said, I just talked to him briefly the other night, but maybe an interesting story to delve into.
Yeah.
Do like a feature piece on it.
Man. Do you ever get to, anyone ever offer to take you around the track or let you drive or?
No. And I'm surprised they haven't.
Yeah.
I'd like to take the wheel. I don't want to ride. I want to.
I wrote a story about ice racing down
in Homer or in Anilchik.
Yeah. Halfway in between somewhere down there. Years ago, they let me take a couple laps.
Or maybe it's Kasilov I'm thinking of.
Yeah. It was, up on a hill and there was like a bar back there, a lake. It was on a lake.
What'd you drive?
Oh, I have no idea. It's probably a Cutlass or something. Some beat up demolition derby car.
You took a couple laps around the lake?
Yeah.
Or Frozen Lake? Nice.
Yeah, their racetrack. They had a racetrack there.
Oh, it was a racetrack. It wasn't a lake. It was
on the lake.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. But it was, you're on ice.
Yeah. Yeah, it was the ice racing.
And was it with studded tires, right? Do you know?
I imagine. Okay. Yeah, no, it must have been.
Slipping and sliding a lot?
Oh, yeah, everybody's slipping and sliding.
Could you actually drive it? Were you taking control? Okay.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You weren't
There was enough. There was enough attraction, so there must have been studs or all-season radials. Yeah. I don't know.
Well, they race with studs. They race, actually, I'm not too entirely sure on this, but I know they do race. Their tires have some sort of, the ice racers here and down in Homer and around those communities, they do have some sort of studded tires, so It's not just they're not out there just on slicks, you know, just because otherwise you wouldn't be able to go anywhere, barely.
Yeah, we used to put drill quarter inch sheet metal screws into the knobbies of our dirt bike tires to ride on later into the fall, into the winter.
You know, it was a little disappointing the other night at Twin City Raceway. They only had two classes, really actually three classes of cars out there racing. Usually they have upwards at, you know, five classes. They have A and B stock, the Legends, the late models, and then the sprints. And the other night they had only A stock and Legends, and then they had some sprint cars going out there making laps, competing. And part of the reason was you know, a lot of guys are taking their cars up to the Palmer Raceway, Alaska Raceway Park, which is in its third year of existence now, the paved oval, and it's a really nice track. Hopefully when Twin City Raceway races next in a couple of weeks, that they'll have, you know, a full they'll have more cars, more vehicles for their classes. So we'll see, I guess.
Yeah, it's a half mile track up there, isn't it?
I think it's a third of a mile.
Oh, okay.
So it's a high well built facility, well built track. When I was up there when the first weekend they raced 2 years ago. So,
man,
yeah. Cool.
Jeff, you ever race anything?
Just myself.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know the difference between Star Wars and Star Trek, and I really don't know the difference between A stock and B stock.
That's probably engines or something.
Yeah, modifications. Jeff, the only racing Jeff does is when he races out to hike, driving out the trailhead.
Oh, no, I don't do that. No, I mean, it's construction. I wouldn't dream of speeding in a construction zone.
I wasn't accusing you of speeding. I'm just saying that you're racing out there because you can't wait to get on the trail.
Guilty as charged.
I don't understand hiking.
What?
Hiking. I don't understand hiking.
People, it's a beautiful state we live in.
Yeah? Yeah, you can see it from the road, too. I think
you take it for granted. You grew up in Dillingham. Beauty was all around you your entire life.
You ever been to Dillingham?
I've heard.
Okay, there's beauty to the northwest. That's about it.
Is that where you put the studs on your bike tires?
Yeah.
Nice. Okay. So,
you guys, what do you guys think about the NBA playoffs? Or you want to talk about the NHL?
Either way, I haven't been following each game closely, but I've been, you know, keeping track of stats.
Yeah.
So, I mean, LeBron's having a playoffs for the ages, it seems like, even though they're down 2-0 in the finals right now, his team.
Yeah. He's, before that game one, well, even at the game two where he didn't even do that well, but he was kind of like a one-man band. I'm almost prepared to call him the best player ever. I've been holding out. I've been holding out.
I'm right with you there. I mean, for me as a Chicago, you know, Bulls fan, you know, you always stick up for MJ.
Yeah.
And of course, you know, he was undefeated in finals. He went 6-0 in the NBA finals, and LeBron's now in his I think his ninth finals, eight straight.
Yeah.
I think people, and I've been hearing a lot of this on national talk radio, is people. They can't get away from the fact that, you know, he's been to nine finals, but he's only won three of them. Well, eight so far, and he's won. He's 3-for-8 in NBA finals, and say, well, Jordan was undefeated. How can LeBron be? He has a 3-5 record in NBA finals with his teams. But I don't care win or loss. He's been there that many times. I mean. Yeah. That in itself should be, I don't see how that tarnishes his legacy. I mean, I don't know. I mean, I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, if he were 8-for-8, I mean, he'd long ago be the greatest player of all time. The fact that he's 3-for-8 and there for a ninth time, you know, I think he's there.
And he's gone up again. Obviously, this is now the fourth year in a row that he and the Cavaliers have faced off with the Golden State Warriors, and I think. You ask just about anybody, and they'll say, I mean, right now we don't have the perspective of history yet, but I think they'll say the Golden State Warriors, you know, in 10 years from now, I think we'll be looking at this Warriors team as one of the greatest, as one of the, you know, the dynasty teams, you know, the Bulls of the 90s, the Warriors of the 2010s.
Oh, yeah.
you know, the Lakers have had their dynasties. So the Kobe years, and you know, there's
they could shape up to be you know, I almost said Celtic-esque in their dynasty, but they might not win them all like the Celtics did, but I think they have the potential to go to the series or the finals several more years.
Didn't the Celtics win 11 straight, or they went to 11 straight finals?
Yeah.
Unbelievable. That's a record.
Yeah.
So let me ask you a question when it comes to LeBron James, Michael Jordan, people like that. How much does – obviously they're all transcendent talents – but how much do you get credit or not get credit for who you end up surrounded by as a person? Because that's where clearly Michael Jordan has the edge, right? He was surrounded by Phil Jackson, Scottie Pippen, constantly surrounded by people who could make him flourish and win titles. Where LeBron has really had a hard time getting into that groove, being surrounded by a coach who can coach him, who can surround him with players that let him win a championship. So is that just happenstance, or does Jordan get credit for something like that? And I don't think that's something that's often discussed when you talk about individual stats and stuff like that, physical abilities. But I think if you're a transcendent talent and you're smart enough to realize you need very good people around you, I think that's something that's in your favor, and I think that's something that's never put into this discussion.
LeBron needs teammates that know what the score is at the end of the game.
Oh, man.
You think Scottie Pippen never lost track of the score in the last couple seconds?
God, that was so horrible.
The memes went crazy on the internet.
he got a standing ovation, too, when he got introduced the next night.
But, yeah.
But don't forget that first couple years, two, 3 years in Chicago, Jordan had nobody around him. He was the league-leading scorer for several years, and I don't even know if they were 500.
I mean, I agree with that, but I think he went to North Carolina. He had one of the greatest coaches of all time in Dean Smith. I think he realized what good coaching means to individual performance. I'm not saying LeBron doesn't. I'm just saying I think people just think it was pure accident that Jordan was surrounded by what Jordan is surrounded by. Maybe that Brady's surrounded by what Brady is surrounded by.
Hmm.
But I think when you're that talented, you can have and do whatever you want, and you're still smart enough to surround yourself with people like a Phil Jackson, a Bill Belichick. I think that's something that's not often discussed when you're talking about greatest players of all time. But I think it's something that has to be.
I think LeBron brought in Tyronn Lue in favor of, what was the other guy's name, Blatt? No.
I mean, I don't want to necessarily get into all the specifics like ins and outs, because I mean, it's impossible for us to know what LeBron did and didn't do. I'm just saying, you know, I think you have to give someone credit for a Jordan credit for surrounding himself with the right type of people. I mean, Jordan clearly could have gotten fed up with Phil Jackson and gotten rid of him if he wanted to. You know, he could have done whatever he wanted to, but he was smart enough to kind of surround himself with that championship culture in Chicago.
You know, it probably started with Jordan, the ability, well, maybe Magic, the ability for a player to influence who their coach is. Because I think Magic wound up edging out whoever his coach was in
Paul
LA.
Westfall, I believe.
Was it Westfall? Wow, no, it wasn't Westfall.
Come on, really? What? I thought I really pulled one out of the hat right there.
Might have been Westfall. I'm going to look it up, but but he was the one who, he got Riley in.
Yeah, yeah. Please look it up, and please have it be Paul Westfall.
I'm looking up. You guys talk among yourselves here. It's incumbent upon you,
too. Caps are up 3-1 in the Stanley Cup Finals on the Vegas Golden Knights. I mean, that's a story. In their first year of existence, and they get to the Stanley Cup Finals. I saw... Did you find the answer yet?
No. But
I was going to say, I mean, I just want to mention, you know, because I roam Twitter daily. I'm a tweet fanatic, and I saw a great thing the other day that said, man, Cubs fans can really sympathize with Golden Knights, you know, Vegas Golden Knights fans. All the years of, you know, heartbreak and heartache and families, generations wondering if they'll ever live long enough to see their team win a championship. you know.
Right. Yeah.
First year of existence. Come on. They're in the Stanley Cup Finals. I know they're down 3-1, but.
Yeah, and, you know, it's all cast-offs from the other teams, yep. right? I mean, the ones that they chose not to protect in the expansion draft.
Yeah, yeah, that's been incredible to see that play out. But they got, I think these are guys that you said other teams weren't willing to protect, so they gave them up into to the Knights. But guys that are still very capable of playing. I mean, Marc-Andre Fleury, their goalkeeper. How did wasn't it Pittsburgh? Wasn't he Pittsburgh?
I think so. Yeah.
Yeah. How did he get loose? Yeah. How did he go to the Knights?
Yeah.
The guy's been phenomenal.
Yeah. On Morning Edition this morning, when they were talking about it, they said, you know, the Caps have been around for, I think they said 47 years, and this is their first time in the championship. Uh-huh. Then the Knights' first year, first time in the championship. Jeff, I'm going to give you a half a point.
I'll take it.
Well, actually, I'm going to give you 6/10. It was Paul Westhead.
Oh, my gosh. So who's Paul Westphal? It's got to be somebody.
Yeah, he was a guard for the Phoenix Suns, and then he became a coach.
Oh, gotcha.
And I don't know if he coached for the Lakers, though.
I mean, I'm getting the first part right, like Star Wars, Star Trek, Westphal, Westhead. But it's just that second part, that 4/10 that Jay's not awarding me.
What's
that
my
I'm
name
getting.
Again? Joey Smith?
Yeah, I think so. Again, with the Capitals, though, we see a guy, Ovechkin, one of those transcendent talents. They're playing that defensive system now, and maybe it results in a championship for him. Maybe he surrounded himself with the right type of coach and the right type of players.
Mm-hmm.
Which I guess Russian hockey players are, you know, they're normally... known as kind of more selfish hockey players, so hopefully it works out for them.
Are there still big time Russian hockey players coming to America? What's the state of Russian hockey right now?
It has to be getting better, I think. I don't know. I mean, I don't know.
I think I would describe it as more individualistic. I mean, the way back in the Red Army days, it probably is coordinated of a team. Is, you know, many sports aficionados will say that they've ever seen. I mean, they had a track record of winning consistently that I don't know that any sporting organization has ever matched.
Yeah,
I mean, the coordination of them on the ice was unbelievable.
Are you saying it's different now?
Yeah, I mean, there's not that. You know, there's not that Russian national team identity.
Yeah.
But they're still incredibly talented players that come out of Russia. But they tend to be more individual talents.
Yeah.
Than these incredible, like, synchronized team talents. I mean, obviously, they bombed out of the Olympics in Sochi.
Yeah.
So, I mean, they didn't... And then that was huge for them, you know. Putin really wanted them to perform there, and they didn't.
Right. They didn't have NHL players this year, did they?
No.
Yeah. Hmm.
Disappointing, to
say
the least.
The NHL continued... They didn't, you know, take a break during the Olympics like they have in the past.
Right.
So that's why, yeah.
Yeah. Let's see. Paul Westphal, NBA championship as a player in 1974 with the Celtics. Then he played with the Suns, Sonics, and Knicks. He was a college coach for a while. And then in 1992, he started coaching with the Suns. Spent 3 years there, 2 years with the Sonics. Then, the Kings, 2009 to 2012. And right now, or then most recently, he was an assistant coach in Brooklyn.
How recently was that?
Till 2016.
Oh, Brooklyn still has a basketball team?
Wow. The Nets. Owned by Russians. A Russian. Yeah. I'm seeing here.
What else?
I don't know. We've talked about all the sports. How's Quidditch? How's the Quidditch season going?
Yeah. I'm just trying to think if I should give a shout out to any of the sports teams, the high school teams that just finished up. You know, the
yeah. I was actually going to ask you about that.
Kenai boys soccer.
Yeah,
I was going to say Kenai boys soccer. I should give a shout out to them because, and all the soccer teams, not just them. I mean, the Sohai girls, Kenai girls also went to state.
Homer boys.
The Homer boys. Yep. I knew there was one I was missing there, but, yeah, the Kenai boys, they are the first, The Kenai boys became the first peninsula team to win a state high school soccer championship. It had never been done before. 2 years ago, they went to the state final. Now that was a first. That was the first ever for a peninsula team, boys or girls. And they lost to South that day. Now here they are 2 years later. They win the state title. This year, though, was the state was split into two divisions. There was a Division I and a Division II. So the bigger teams, based on school population, were in Division I. So Kenai was a Division II team, and they won that state title. But, man, I was asking the players. I mean, the players and coaches I talked to, you know, they said, it really doesn't matter. State title is still a state title. And as they pointed out, and it's worth mentioning, they still beat some of the top teams in the state. For example, Kenai beat Colony earlier this year. And Colony was a team that finished second in Division I this year. They went to the state final in Division I, and they lost to Diamond. So they've shown they're capable of playing with, you know, the best in the state all as well. So,
you know, I probably last 7 or 8 years, maybe 7, 8, 9 years, I've gotten into soccer.
World Cup's coming up.
I know.
Actually a week from now.
Is it a week?
I think it's about 7 or 8 days.
Oh man.
Yeah.
Yeah. I really like soccer now. It's I enjoy watching it. I you know what the difference was, is I had somebody explain the things I didn't understand about it.
Oh,
it's like the stupid offside rule, which is still stupid, just like it is in hockey.
Did I explain to you the offside rule back in the day?
I think
I remember being in a bar and using beer bottles to explain the offside rule. You did not get it until it could be laid out properly with beer bottles.
That's right. And you said, see, this beer bottle here, he could just stay there. If there were no offside rule, he would just stay there.
Yeah.
It'd be cherry picking.
That's a pretty mean flashback I just had there.
Yeah.
But no, so the Kenai boys, they deserve a lot of credit because it wasn't just this year they showed up. They had a group of seniors. They lost in the region final their freshman year. They won the region final their sophomore, junior, senior year. Yeah. These past 2 years, the only game they lost was the first game of the season, which their coach, Joel Reemsma, plays everyone, just considers like a preseason game. So they haven't lost a game they're actively looking to win in two seasons. So I mean, once they beat a team, whether it's Soldotna or home or whatever, they never lost to them again. Like, so say if Soldotna beat those seniors when they were freshmen, well, now they're graduates, but if Soldotna beat those seniors when they were freshmen, you know, they never lost to Soldotna again. They just had a real incredible track record of success, and that's saying a lot in a game like soccer, where, you know, a fluke goal can change everything, can change the context of games, and also soccer, where you're playing sometimes 3 or 4 games a week, which you shouldn't be doing in soccer because it's too physically demanding of a sport to do that. But even with that, they were just constantly successful. So I think that group of seniors deserves a lot of credit for what they've accomplished.
So next year is going to be their building year.
Possibly. I mean, yeah.
They're losing
kind of the way sports work.
Yeah, well, but they're losing a chunk of, you know, seniors, some real talent this year. But there's still a lot of good guys coming back, juniors and sophomores on this team.
That's the
really
thing.
Impressive.
Homer, Soldotna, and Kenai all had a really excellent group of seniors. Yeah. I mean, those teams were not some of the best, you know, Division II teams in the state. They're some of the best soccer teams in the state.
Yeah, period.
Yeah. The game between Homer and Soldotna to earn a Division II state berth was incredible. Was awesome soccer. And, I mean, one of those teams stayed home and ended up being Soldotna. But I just think it's neat the level that soccer has come to since, you know, started out in, like, 2000. They're playing really incredible soccer right now. And I think it's because it all starts with that Boys and Girls Club program. You'll see when you're driving to Oilers Park this summer, Jay, you'll drive by Kenai Middle School and the fields will be packed with kids.
Yeah.
So the best kids cut out of that, go to comp, and then they end up like in high school. And so you've got really good soccer going on in the area right now.
Wow. You know, they just started a school soccer program in Kodiak like 3 years ago. I think this is probably their third season.
I think the Kodiak boys were at state this year, weren't they?
I don't know. They got their...
Oh, yes, they were. I'm sorry.
Oh, wow.
I said...
No.
I'm sorry. I was thinking...
Hell no.
No, yeah, Kodiak boys were at state. I get so narrowly focused on, on the teams I cover, I forget who's there, but yeah.
Well, hey, speaking of soccer fields, do these fields down here at the end of this road ever get used for anything? I've never seen a single person on them ever.
I think I see them more in the fall, the co-ed teams in the fall, like Cuckoo Academy.
Oh, okay.
They get some use, but I think the problem was that they built those, and then right after that, the turf fields came into play. I mean, back in the day, it was real hard to get enough soccer fields to play on because everyone would be out on them in the spring and the grass just wasn't ready to handle that load.
Right.
So they needed a bunch of fields like around the area that you could rotate on, almost kind of like cattle grazing or something like that. They needed to give the land some rest. But obviously once you have turf, you don't have to do that. So I think that kind of changed the demand for fields. So that's probably why you see those fields empty a lot of the times.
They're very nice looking fields. They keep them up.
Uh-huh.
Right. Is there adult leagues? I mean, do adult leagues play there or anything? Or
I don't know if there's necessarily adult leagues per se. I think there's some adults who get together and play, knock the ball around a bit.
Is there adult rugby in this town?
Yes.
Is there?
Are you in?
I'm into watching it. I'm far too slow and decrepit to participate. But when I was down in Wyoming last summer, I stayed in one spot there for almost a month. And one of the little towns had a tiny little rugby league of like five teams. And I went and watched them a couple nights. And it was great.
Yes, what there is here, they're called the Kenai River Wolfpack. It's a rugby team. There's not enough for a league. But their big event is the Between the Tides tournament. It's done during the dip netting season. And they will get people from Wisconsin and all places in the lower 48 because they're playing right behind the back door, you know, on those fields there.
Oh.
Yeah. And so these people think it's great to come up here and play, you know, right next to the Kenai River and stuff like that. So that's the big event for the local rugby squad.
Oh, man. Okay, so that's during dip netting.
Yes, during dip netting. Yeah, right. So you can watch for that. It just follow them on Facebook, and the tournament will come up, and you can go watch it.
Man, do you play?
Oh, no, I'm too brittle.
you No. What about you?
Nah.
No?
Nope. Don't play. I don't know. It's never been an interest of mine, I guess.
Oh, okay.
But they'll also maybe pull some players in. Have you heard that, like, Field of Dreams at, like, awesome rugby grounds up in Anchorage?
No. Wow. Yeah.
I mean, they'll get, like, national-type players. It's an incredible place surrounded by mountains and incredible clubhouse and stuff like that.
Wasn't it basically, like, one man's dream originally?
Yeah, yeah.
In South Anchorage there? Like, yeah. You really can't see it. You know, if you're in Anchorage, it's not like you can see it resting on the hillside. There's just this massive field, though. And there's been stories done on it, just like you said, just a massive, pristine rugby field sitting up there that was put together.
Wow.
Yeah.
But how long has that been there?
Several years, at least.
Huh. Yeah.
Man, that's cool.
And the culture of rugby is really neat. I mean, it's kind of like if you're a rugby player, you can go into town and, you know, always be able to have someone buy you a drink or always have a place to stay. And that's why it's really neat to, I think, cover that Between the Tides event, because you see these guys and girls out there pounding on each other in the during the game, but then afterward they're all having a beer or barbecue or whatever, and there's a real genuine camaraderie there,
right?
That's neat to see.
I like that too. I'm still not 100% sure on the rules. Are you up to speed on them?
I mean, I'm not to full speed on them because no one's explained them to me with beer bottles.
Just as long as there's no offsides, right?
Yeah. You know, the scrum is like the most visible aspect about rugby that people might notice. But It just looks made up.
It's artificial?
Yeah, it's like, there's nothing really happening in there. They toss the ball in there, they're, you know, they're scrummed up, and
you're just waiting for someone to grab the ball and run.
Yeah.
And there's nothing happening, right?
Yeah, I mean, did I read that right? Maybe I need to get in a scrum.
I think you do need to get in a scrum.
Yeah, maybe.
I have read, though, that there's a certain amount of Pythagorean luck to a scrum.
Well, you know, it's... There was, since you've latched on that phrase, we listened to the radio this morning. The guy was talking about, I can't remember what sporting event, but he said a body count greater than Beowulf. It was like the best, and it was in a sports story. I was like, oh, that's the best line in a sports show I've ever heard. A body count comparable to Beowulf is what he said.
Sure. It wasn't rugby. I mean, that's what I mean. I think rugby is one of the things that attract people to it is the brutality of it, where you know, they don't wear helmets really or pads, and there's these big hulking men that just they smash each other.
Yeah.
What's interesting, though, you being a Seahawks fan, Jay?
Yeah. Oh. Yeah.
Rugby-style tackling. Yeah, rugby-style tackling. Like, you say there's a brutality to it and they don't wear helmets, and there's definitely players who end up with concussion problems. But because they don't wear helmets, they have a certain style of tackling where you keep your head out of the way. Ah. So that was something that Pete Carroll really drilled extensively to try and make his players be safer and to also make them sure tacklers. And it worked out well for them, obviously. We all know about the Legion of Boom. And Pete Carroll made a video of how to do that. And high school teams have used that video to, you know, make the kids be safer tacklers. So I think there's a lot to be said for the rugby tackling technique, and I guess not its brutality, but how safe it can be. You know, it's better than using your helmet as a missile.
I like it. And I have heard of the rugby tackling technique. Note just handed to me, a caller, a listener says, the soccer fields down here are used every Tuesday and Thursday evenings all summer. For what? They do not say. I'm sure...
Head out there Tuesday and Thursdays.
Yeah. Except for I'll be at the ball game. Thursday evening.
Well, yeah.
This Thursday evening, anyway. When's the next auto race, by the way?
Oh, boy. I don't know what the schedule is. I should know.
I'll just keep looking, because can you get me into the pits?
Yeah. I don't know if I can get you into the pits.
But yeah.
You just buy a ticket to go in the pit. Oh, okay.
It's not like a backstage pass. Yeah. Do they even have backstage patches anymore?
I don't know. You just say you're with the band or something. I'm with the pit crew.
I'm carrying the tires.
I'm here to sipe the tires. Yeah. Joey knows what that means.
I know what it means, too.
You do?
I did once did a DOT ride along, and they sipe their tires when they're, you know, the plow guys. So, yeah, I know what that is, too.
Nice. You've been listening to the Kenai Conversation. It is just about 11 o'clock, and this is listener-supported public radio for the Central Kenai Peninsula, KDLL, 91.9 FM, Kenai, Soldotna. 46 degrees, southwest winds about 10 miles an hour, the barometer 29.63 inches of mercury. We're looking for mostly cloudy skies today. That means we might get a sun break or two, perhaps. A high around 58 degrees. Southwest winds about 5 miles an hour. Mostly cloudy overnight, a low around 44. A little sunshine in the forecast tomorrow with a high around 56. Don't forget you can hear the recorded rebroadcast of the Kenai Conversation Saturday afternoon at 5 p.m. I'm not sure how much of this sports information will still be accurate at Friday at 5, or Saturday at 5, but that's just the way sports goes. Thanks for joining us.